let's thank this team for, man, great music. Man, that was moving. I tell you what, when you hear words of belief spoken to you, man, there's something that moves within our spirit. Oh man, so good to see you guys this weekend. My name's Kurt, if we've not had a chance to meet, and if you're here for the first time, we certainly hope it's not your last time. And those of you tuning in online, it's so good to have you join us from our city, state, nation, world, wherever you may be joining us from, and we would love to hear from you. Let us know where you're tuning in from today in the chat. And we're in week number 5 of the series. We're wrapping the series Build Different up today. And if you missed a week, here's what's cool. All of our previous weekends are online, and so you can go to the watch button at crosspointweb.org, and you can go to previous weekends at the bottom of the page, and you can find everything. As long as the internet's up and operating, it will be there, and you can binge watch, you can send it to a friend, you can watch again or catch up. And so today, we're going to look at what I believe to be one of the most powerful things we can do as we serve as a guide for the next generation. And so before we do that, let me pray for us. God, thank you for this moment. And I'm just asking that over these next few minutes, as you've already been doing as we've been in this room together, watching online together, God, I just pray that this would be a fruitful time for us. And that we would get a better picture of your dreams and the opportunities you have for us and your ambitions and your belief in us. And I just pray that you help my words to be articulating your heart as we connect over these next few minutes. And everything that happens from this platform, God, I pray that it would move us to new places and that you would be in it. We pray these things according to your character, Jesus. Amen. You know, in a 1968 study, there's a guy by the name of Dr. Robert Rosenthal, and he and his research team explored something really fascinating. It's called the observer expectancy effect, which is really this idea that reality can be positively or negatively influenced by the expectation of others. Now, the research that this team did, it was fascinating because it was on rats and college students. In fact, with this first group of college students, they had been given this, this group of rats that had a DNA strain that they were told made them genius rats, meaning they were gonna be able to go through the maze more efficiently than the average rat. Now, with the second group of students, they were given just ordinary average intelligence rats. They're told, you know, this group's going to not perform so well. I feel like that was my high school experience. Like, he's not going to do so well, but hang with him. All right. And so, as you can guess, the genius rats outperformed the average rats, and they called it measurably and consistently. So on an ongoing, consistent, and measurable basis. Now, here's what was fascinating about this experiment. The experiment wasn't actually on the rats, all right? This was an experiment actually on the college students. In fact, the rats, there were no genius rats. There's no such thing as a genius rat. You cannot DNA infuse a genius rat. These were just everyday, run-of-the-mill rodents. The difference in why these rats performed so differently was in how the students treated them. And basically, time and time again, they saw that the power of expectation actually influenced the outcomes. And so the students that were working with these so-called genius rats, so they thought, they treated the rats more warmly. They spoke to them differently. They're more encouraging and leading them toward the goal. Now, I recently had an opportunity to unpack this principle, the observer expectancy effect, with Dr. Tim Elmore, and he's one of my favorite researchers on the next generation. We've been using one of his books, The Pandemic Population, during this series. In fact, there's 5 of these left in the comments. If you want one on your way out today, if you're online, you can hit the button and order one online. And he's also at growingleaders.org/blog, which that never gets old. And we talked a bit about how the research from these students and rats actually transfers into how we lead students in the next generation. So here's a bit of our conversation.
I think I told you the last time when we talked that when my kids heard I was talking to you, they're like, Dad, Tim Elmore's up there with Seth Meyers and Jimmy Fallon as the top 3 people you would spend time with. Like, have you ever put yourself in that realm before?
No, I have not. And every time I come home, my wife loves me, but she reminds me I'm just a man and I'm nothing special.
Yes, I think we need wives to remind us.
Yes, we do.
Well, hey, thanks for joining us. You know, you talk a lot about high belief and high expectation. And when these are together, they're magical.
Yeah.
Why are these important at all times, but especially as we think about coming out of the pandemic?
Yeah, that's a great question. In 1968, we began to discover through research from Robert Rosenthal the power of high expectations with kids. In other words, when an adult leader, a parent, a teacher, a coach exhibits very, very high expectations of the class or the team. Students tend to perform better. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. What we learned since 1968, however, is sometimes expectations can break a child or break a student, meaning the student feels like the expectations are so high, they kind of get paralyzed emotionally or academically. We've all heard about that, perhaps that tiger mom that says, you know, master the violin or you get no dinner or whatever, you know, and we mean well, but sometimes our kids just, it backfires. The 1990s was a significant decade where we began to uncover research on high belief. And so, like you said, when high expectations, I expect a lot of you, son or daughter, match high belief, and I know you, and I know you can do this, it's powerful. In fact, the research says it's almost magical. So Ivy League schools got together and they began to work with middle school teachers and their students. When an assignment was returned to the student with remarks on it, comments on it, feedback that wasn't so nice, the teacher started adding comments to see what would elicit good effort for the second time. You know, what would make the students really come back with a better effort? They tried dozens of responses, but the one that got the biggest response was this simple phrase. And by the way, Kurt, I don't think the words are magical, but the thought is magical. Here it is. I'm giving you these comments because I have high expectations of you and I know you can reach them. Do you see high expectation and high belief? There's personal and yet, you know, so it's velvet brick. That's one of our habitudes. Velvet on the outside, brick on the inside. High belief is the velvet, high expectation is the brick. So I would just say when moms and dads and teachers and coaches and employers can say to this next generation, I know this seems hard. However, I know you. I know what you can do. Sometimes they'll buy the adult opinion more than their own opinion of themselves, where they don't think they can do it. And that's what I think we owe them as their leaders.
Yeah. Man, how cool is that? I mean, your belief in someone else can actually shape their belief. In fact, I love this phrase. He says, you know, these comments that were magical were, I'm giving you these comments because I have high expectations, and it's not the words as much as the thoughts, he said, and I know you can reach them. And you know what's so fascinating about these words as we think about this idea of high belief and high expectation is this was actually something modeled right out of the life of Jesus. In fact, we're going to look at something from the Gospel according to John. John was one of the authorized biographers of Jesus' life. He wrote about the experiences, all these moments that Jesus had with people in his life. And in this moment, he's kind of instilling high belief and high expectation in his team, and he's preparing to leave them. He's preparing to return to heaven, and he says, it's actually better this way that I'm going to be leaving you physically. And they're like, what do you mean? It's better that you leave me. And he's like, yeah, it's better that way because he's instilling something in them. In fact, take a look at what he says right here. He says, truly I say to you, whoever believes in me will also do the works that I do. And so there's an element where we have some belief and that belief sets us up, but it's his belief in us. It's his high belief in us, his high expectation in us that actually moves us forward. I mean, think about this. He says, whoever believes in me will also do works that I do. And then he goes on, and even greater works. You're like, greater works? Greater works than you? He's like, yes, greater works because I'm going to be with the Father. I mean, think about this for a moment. I don't begin to assume that we're all in the same place spiritually as it relates to who Jesus is. I mean, you may be on a journey to understanding, you know, as you're here sitting in this room or as you're tuning down a line, and that's cool because this is a place where you can kind of piece together, you know, who you begin to believe Jesus is. But what John says in the Gospel according to John is that, you know, Jesus was God in the flesh, meaning God in the form of Jesus who came into the world, he took on flesh, and he died for your sin and for my sin. And so this God who sacrificed himself on our behalf for us to establish a relationship, he did something for us, moved on our behalf before we ever even turned an eye to him, he says, hey, you're actually going to do greater things than me. And not only that, but when you begin to look at the accounts of Jesus' life throughout the Gospels, I mean, we see things like Jesus healing the blind, right? And you're like, greater things than that? And they're like, yeah, greater things than healing the blind. And then we see things like Jesus, you know, raising people from the dead. And you're like, I'm going to do greater things than that. And Jesus is like, yeah, greater things. And there's even a moment where Jesus turns water into wine at a wedding. Let me tell you what, you learn how to do that, you're going to be invited to every wedding this summer, right? I mean, every party in your neighborhood, you are going to be the guest. And he says, you know, greater, even greater than that. And so He says these crazy words. He says, you will actually do greater things. Now, maybe that's not in the tangible things, but it's in the impact and the ways that our lives, you know, touch the lives of others. There's a couple boys that live in our neighborhood that they live right on the inside of First Turn in on our neighborhood. I drive by their house every single day. We walk by their house on a regular occasion. And they have this innate ability. I had this when I was a kid, but whenever I would drive by, they just happened to be going up for a shot while they're playing basketball. You remember doing that as a kid? You like see a car coming. You're like, oh, I'm going to make sure like I'm right in the middle of a shot as the car is driving by, because you never know who's in the car, right? I grew up in Michigan, and I thought, man, Chuck Daly, former coach of the Pistons, could be driving by, right? Or Judd Heathcote, coach of Michigan State, or Steve Fisher. I mean, I was like, you just never know. And so you time it just right as kids. Or if you grew up in Indiana, it might be Larry Bird. You're like, maybe Larry Bird's just, you know, happens to be, you know, cruising through my neighborhood. I'll never forget a few moments where I came up close to Larry Bird when I was at Pacer games, had a chance to sit low and had access to the locker room restaurant. And, you know, coming in and out of the restaurant, Larry Bird, when he was the GM, would sit down in the second row. And, you know, every now and then we'd cross in the kind of the walkway down there. And have you ever noticed how when you're in the presence of greatness, you hope greatness recognizes you or even, like, looks at you for a moment? You know what I'm talking about? Like, I just had these moments when I was down there, even though I was well into my like 30s and 40s, where I thought, man, I hope Larry sees me. He might go, man, Kurt, I know you have game, right? Because I mean, when Larry would look at me, he'd think that. And if he saw me play, he would definitely know that. I mean, I always said the only reason I didn't make the NBA is because I was never discovered. Now, my friends were like, you weren't discovered for a reason, but that's neither here nor there. So, but you know, if I were to meet Larry Bird, he said, hey, Kurt, I want to help you develop your game. I want to help you go left better. I want to help you develop your shot. In fact, would you be willing to meet me every morning, say at 5? In fact, let's go 3 a.m. every morning. Give us 2 hours before I head to the office, and we'll just work on your game. He could pick whatever time he wanted. I would be there because I would be practicing with Larry Bird, right? Like, that's what I would do. And if I get that excited about a man showing me how to get better at basketball, I mean, think about what Jesus is saying right here. He's saying God has an ambition for your life, a vision for your life, that you would actually replicate his character, that you would do greater things than Jesus did right here on the earth. That you would be so conformed to his image, that you would be built up and operate out of that belief, and that you would actually build that into others. Now, as we think about this idea of high belief and high expectation, one of the things that helps me is to see this in like a matrix or a grid to understand how the different, you know, components play out. And so we developed this a few months ago. In fact, Mark taught this early this year and did kind of a quick flyover. I want to bring it back to just highlight a few things in this because this is so powerful. And I think as you look at this, you're going to see this is supported by history. You've probably experienced most of these things, and we see this in this scene from the life of Jesus. And so take a look here. We have expectation. We have high expectation, low expectation, and we have belief when we have a high belief and low belief. And so I want you to imagine for a moment what it would be like to be in a context where you had high expectations for you, but low belief. That would be kind of the upper left quadrant right here. All right, and you might be thinking, I don't have to imagine that. I live that every single day. Like, that's my boss. I mean, they have all these expectations, but they don't have much belief that I actually can achieve them. Or maybe this is your kids, right? And so what's that context feel like? Well, here's the word. It's stressful. That's what it is. I mean, because you have all these expectations of you, but you don't really feel like anybody believes you can pull it off. And see, Dr. Elmore, my friend, by the way, he's my friend now. You know, when we've been talking, he talked about these high expectations that can come at times from unhealthy places, meaning, you know, as parents, as grandparents, as coaches, there's times where we can try to get kids to live out of our unlived expectations, our unlived dreams, if you will. I mean, from our emotional deficits, there's moments where, as parents, we can be so concerned about what our social, you know, circle thinks about our kids that we're like, hey, don't disappoint me. I need you to perform well so everybody, you know, thinks well of me. Or even in, you know, kind of inferring or projecting our achievements, our 4.0 GPA, or, you know, our, thank God my kids had a 2.6 GPA dad, right? There is no expectations put on them, right? But like, we infer these things, or if you're the captain of a team and you expect that in your kids, but see, what happens is unhealthy motivations actually infect, not affect, but infect a child's mindset. And over time, not necessarily right away, but over time, these students grow up. And as their social intelligence begins to develop, they begin to resent the people who were bringing these high expectations if they came from unhealthy places, because they felt like it was a very egocentric place that those came out of. And they can feel it, and they feel the demands, and they feel like when there's high expectation but no belief, it leaves this sense of like, don't let me down. It's extremely stressful. So that's first quadrant. The second one, kind of the opposite end, lower right, is this idea of high belief and low expectation. Now, what would this feel like in this quadrant? This would just be hollow. It would be artificial. All right, it would be this hollow belief where there's not much expectation. Sometimes we lower the expectations. We actually do things for our kids, and they might like that in the moment, kind of like, oh man, I just got out of having to complete this. But in the long run, it actually oftentimes backfires. In fact, one of our kids, back when they were in the sixth grade, we got an academic letter about them being on academic probation because they had a D minus in a class. And it was a little surprising because this particular kid, that usually wasn't the way they were academically. And so we got into Skyward, the digital grade book, and looked, and sure enough, I mean, they had a D minus. I mean, they had like a B minus on a project and an F. And the problem was we were like three quarters of the way through the 9 weeks, and we were going, oh my gosh, there's only been two grades. And so we had a couple questions, and we asked to meet with the teacher just to kind of find out how we could support them. And so we said, you know, one, we want to know, like, are there going to be additional grades that they're going to have the opportunity to projects where they can maybe bring their grade up? What can we do to support them in this? And then third, is this grade reflective of what you see? Like, does this reflect how they're tracking, or maybe did they have a bad day one day? And the teacher, he opened the grade book, and he said, let me look at this real quick. And he looked, he's like, oh no. This isn't reflective of that at all. In fact, I'm gonna go ahead and give her or him a B. He said, you know, I'm gonna change it to a B. And Julie and I are like, whoa. That's not what we were asking. No, like, we're not asking you to change the grade. We just wanted to know if it was reflective of where they're at. He said, oh no. I mean, they should have a B. They're awesome. And I walked away from that. I went, oh my gosh, so he has very high belief, but I don't know that the expectation is very high, because he didn't even give them the chance to like show that they could progress. And as a parent, when I walked away from that, I went, oh man. I also thought, this must be the regular conversation with teachers when parents meet with them. They must be like, hey, listen, my kid shouldn't have a D, they should have a B. And he just got in the habit of changing it, I guess. I don't know. It was the strangest thing. Now, let's be honest. As a kid, as a student in that situation, if you went from a D minus to a B without any work, you'd be like, yes, right? Like, I'm not on academic probation anymore. I'm not like right on the line of not being able to do extracurriculars and so on. But at the same time, they know they didn't really achieve it, right? I mean, it's hollow belief. And kids and students feel this. I mean, when there's no expectations, but just high belief, like, oh, you can do it. You're awesome. You got this. It's all hollow, right? Although hyperbole, it actually can be pretty damaging. And then in the next quadrant, you may have low expectation and low belief. And let's be honest, what's that feel like? That is flat out miserable, right? That is like purposelessness. That's like when you grow up in this setting, you're like, man, the moment I can get out of this house, I am gone and I'm never coming back. Because that is flat out miserable. I don't want to be here. I don't want to return to this. No expectation, no belief. But this last one, when we have high expectation and high belief, this is the secret weapon right here. This is where we begin to discover realistic hope that can actually take us to new places. And this is why this phrase that Dr. Elmore uses, you know, man, I have high expectations for you. Here's what I expect, and I know you can achieve it. It balances belief and expectation. In fact, Stanford psychologist Carol Dweck, we looked at her a few weeks ago. She's the one that coined mindset, fixed mindset, growth mindset. A fixed mind believes that I'm either good at math or I'm not good at math. Whereas a growth mind believes, you know, I'm not good at math yet, but my mind is a muscle, so I'm eventually going to get there. To get there, it requires high expectation and high belief, because expectation without belief is incomplete. Now, to help us better understand this, I want to invite my wife to come help explain this a bit. And so I'll help my wife, welcome my wife Julie to the platform here with me today. Come on over here, Julie. Man, they give her like entrance music. She gets like walk-up music. How about that? Like, they don't even give me walk-up music, Julie. Hey, thanks for joining me. So so Julie is our director of kids environments here at CrossPoint, but at the same time, that's like your side job.
Right.
We call her day job or her main job. She works for HSC Schools and does a lot of work with teacher development specialists, training. In fact, this last year, you spent a lot of time on this concept right here, which is really this idea of self-efficacy. And so explain to us what that is and why it's so important.
Well, it really ties into what we've been talking about already tonight. You know, self-efficacy is this belief that we are able to succeed in things that are realistic for us. Like you brought up basketball. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I will never play in the WNBA. Mm-hmm. Really? However, right? Like I'm short, my age, all the things. But I could learn how to play basketball.
Yes. Yes.
You know, so it's within that range of what I'm capable of. And so, you know, really when you think about this efficacy, which first of all, it's a really fun word to say, but when we think about that ability to succeed, there's actually some sources that can help us with that in really all aspects of our life. And so the first one is that we need to experience success. And so we don't mean like necessarily that end goal, but success with certain things up to that. So like me learning how to play basketball, right? Like me learning how to make a basket would be one of those things, the incremental steps of success. The next one is to see others succeed. So ideally, it would be great if you are actually seeing somebody that's just a little bit ahead of you in that learning process, but it doesn't have to be. So you're like, gosh, I could do that too.
So when you see it, it actually inspires you to believe you can do it as well.
Right, absolutely. And then the next one is like to receive encouragement. Not just like way to go or awesome. Okay, I do love to say those. However, right? Like, however, it's like real specific. Like, what are those things that you've really succeeded at? And then the last one is managing negative emotions.
Which we all have, right?
Right?
Every single time.
And actually, that's huge because if you already have this negative mindset, you kind of go in this downward spiral. I really don't have to tell anybody that. I think we all have experienced that before. And so it's like getting out of that. You know, actually, this makes me think of a time where we decided to ride bikes down Pikes Peak.
Down Pikes Peak, 96% of the way downhill.
Right. So, because really, this can happen in any part of your life. So, for example, with that.
And Julie doesn't ride bikes all that much. Just like this was kind of like a first in a while moment, right?
Yeah, but
it
I'm not like super sporty, and yet I get these ideas, and Kurt's like, "Yeah, let's do it.
Let's go."
And then we get up to the top of the Pikes Peak, and I'm like, "What did I sign up for?"
No guardrails, gravel.
Right, and I had to get
nearly
down
all downhill
on this bike with yes. So anyway, I am the last in the pack. Right? Like 30 minutes behind you. But I'm like, all right, I think I can do this. All right, so.
It wasn't 30. I didn't like go that far ahead of you.
Maybe. <I don't know. laughs> But there were these different spots that we would stop.
Yes.
And so I would experience success in a short amount of time, and we would stop. And you, and my brother was with us at the time too, you both were like giving me encouragement. Like, Julie, you've gone this many miles. Okay, even the person in the van behind us was encouraging me to maybe go a little faster.
I think it was like the highway's going to open in a couple hours. We need to move a little sooner. Like, I think that was some of
that
the encouragement.
That was it. But I also saw older people in front of me. I'm like, I got this, right? Like, surely if they could do it, I can do it.
And this was difficult. Like, she's crying on the first or second switchback, like
you
tears.
You didn't have to tell them that. Right?
Yeah,
but
like tears.
Yeah, I was. So then, you know, that managing that negative emotions. I didn't start that way. I was like, really, God, you're going to have me die on top of Pike's Peak? But by the first stop, I was like, I got to pull myself together, right? Mm-hmm. Again, I'm seeing these people in front of me like, I think I can do this. And I kept gaining more confidence, and that whole positive self-talk just kept happening throughout it. And so that's an experience within an activity, right? But like, that can be lived out through our entire lives, and really it fuels the ability for us to make change, for us to actually make become the people that we're meant to be. Yeah.
And so you work with students, you train teachers, I mean, but you also work here in our right. kids' environments. How have you seen this play out with students?
Yeah, so I've actually been really blessed. I train teachers, and so I haven't had my own classroom for a while, but with the pandemic, I've had the opportunity to work firsthand with more students this year than I have in the last couple. And really, like, this is experienced by all of us. So I'm thinking of one student in particular that I've been working with reading, and we started our time together with her saying, you know, I am not a reader. And I was like, whoa, we had to change this because you are a reader. Mm-hmm. And we started with a really simple book. Again, that short, that piece of success. Mm-hmm. So she could see, I am a reader. And then, you know, again, to see others succeed, me giving her tips, mm-hmm. her sister would come in on the calls and we would experience that together. Mm-hmm. And then receiving that encouragement, again, not just like, hey, way to go, but oh my word, look at you. Like, you're using the reading strategies we came up with. You look for parts of the word, or you like skipped that word and came back to it. We also had to work on, she would get like really upset with herself after having a couple different errors. And so I would stop her and I'm like, what are you thinking right now? Mm-hmm. And she just kind of looked like this. And I'm like, are you kind of feeling like you can't do this? She's like, well, kind of. And so I'm like, all right, well, let's talk about like, how can we change that self-talk? Yeah. In your head, like, what could that sound like, and how could we practice that? Yeah.
And see, I listen, because we've been working at home for at least part of the last year, I would hear this. I'm like, I hear her say, you thought you weren't a reader, right? But you've been growing toward this. Right. In fact, we had a moment with one of our kids. Our oldest daughter, Macy, just finished her freshman year at Butler. And earlier this winter, when the pandemic was kind of its height, her dorm got put on quarantine. And she called us about 7:45 on a Friday night. She had some big plans that weekend, and she calls us crying and says, Mom and Dad, my dorm's going on lockdown in 15 minutes. Anybody in the building has to stay. The Marion County Health Department's here. They're going to be testing all weekend. We have to be stuck inside all weekend long. She's like, I'm putting a bag together, and I'm going to stand on the curb for an hour or two in the 20-degree temperature, by the way, until you can get down and pick me up because I can't do this.
And I really wanted to pick her up, but I knew that wasn't the right thing
to
do.
And so we looked at each other, and I'm shaking my head, and so over the phone, we said, Macy, we are not coming to get you. And crying and tears. And it was hard, right? I mean, this is hard.
Right.
But in the end, we told her, we said, we actually expect your student, we expect you to stay there. And we don't want you to bring that home if you're positive. Right. In fact, you know, and put us all into quarantine. But at the same time, we believe you have the skills and the capacities to do this.
Right.
And so it ended up being one of the best weekends ever for her.
Right.
Right? I mean, we kind of knew that. I mean, think about this. Being stuck in a dorm all weekend, they're feeding pizza to every floor all weekend long, games, movie. It was like a party. It was like the most connective experience all month long at her campus. But it came because of that expectation and belief and her seeing others that were having fun and realizing, okay, I can make the most of this.
Right. And yeah. You know what's really cool about this, too, is we're talking about building into others and students, mm-hmm. but also in the processes of us doing that, we actually are developing our own self-efficacy mm-hmm. as well.
Yeah. So how do we do this? Tim Elmore gives us five things in his book, if you've got his book, chapter 7. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to list these for you. Julie's going to give a little color on them real quick. Five ways we can begin to establish belief and expectation at the same level. Number one is spending one-on-one time with the student to build the relationship. Why is this so important?
Right. I mean, that's the foundation. We need to feel seen and heard, every single one of us. And so for us to really have that connection initially, mm-hmm. that relationship, that's the foundation yeah. of you continuing to grow forward.
So you have to have the trust to build on that.
Right.
Number two is identify their strength. We call this identifying their superpower in our home. Our kids have superpowers, not real like superpowers, but like they have gifts, strengths that allow them to succeed in certain moments.
Yeah, and so again, this is beyond that like, wow, you are awesome. Okay, I love to say those. However, really this is beyond that. Like this is like really noticing and naming strengths. You know, we've got one of our daughters who's always like on the lookout for reading people's emotions. And she will like jump in and check on people, make sure they're okay. And so it's like saying, you know, it's not just like, wow, that was awesome, but like, wow, that was really thoughtful of you. You're the kind of person who is always caring about others. So it's that real specific piece. Mm-hmm.
And then these next two kind of go together. So number three is tie words of affirmation and belief into a student's strength. And then number four, be specific. Why is it important to be specific on these?
Right. And so kind of like what we talked about just a moment ago, if we give a real grandioso affirmation, something that you can't really relate to or they can't really understand, it could mean anything. So again, going back to those like awesome or way to go, like that doesn't give them something to grab onto. Mm-hmm. Us noticing and naming those specific things actually helps build in to our students, our children, into their core. You're helping identify like who they are so that, you know, they are starting to own that themselves.
Yeah. And the ownership is the key.
Correct.
Right, not having something extrinsically, but intrinsically where I begin to motivate. Yeah. And then number five is helping them imagine the preferred future. What's this mean?
Yeah. So again, it's speaking into them what you see in them that they may not see themselves. Mm-hmm. So this student that I've been working with, you know, I am like, gosh, you are a reader. I see this in you. And I see you not just like decoding words, but like thinking about what the author's trying to tell us here. And you're thinking about like, how can I like learn from this? And so it's again, it's speaking into that future that they themselves may not see yet.
Yeah. And I'm telling you, we make mistakes on this. I mean, there's moments we jump in and we interrupt the process, but when you begin to speak into the belief, it's amazing how our kids, others we lead, begin to pick up on that confidence.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Man, this is amazing. I've learned so much from Julie. I sit and listen to her. And so let's thank Julie for just sharing a little bit with us. Thank you, Julie. Appreciate it. Happy Mother's Day, by the way.
Thank you.
Man, she gets exit music too. Like, how? Why? Like, I don't get this. Like, they love you, Julie. All right, so this is so good. I hope you took a screenshot of that and are able to begin to say, how do I do this? Now think about this. This is what Jesus did for us. I mean, this is what we looked at just a few moments ago. He said, you're going to do greater things. You've got certain skill sets, but I believe you have more, and I have high expectations for you, and I believe you can actually hit them. And there's hard work in between to get there. So, how do we put this into practice? I want to give you a bunch of next steps. In fact, you can open your connection card on your app. If you're tuning in online, you know, right below the stream there is the connection card. I want to walk through some of these, and maybe there's one. You don't have to do them all. Maybe one. You're like, this is what I'm going to focus on this week. And so this first one is maybe just asking the question, you know, what action steps should I take this week so I can match expectations to beliefs in those that I lead? And so maybe I have really high expectation, but not high belief. What does it mean for me to balance those out? And you might spend some time reflecting on that with your own kids or with the students you lead or the athletes that you coach or, you know, your grandkids or somebody you're apprenticing at work, because this is where growth happens. It's a secret weapon of developing the next generation. And then number two, we've got a fantastic opportunity coming up here later this month. One of our partners, the Shift Initiative, is providing a online course called A Shifted Approach. And this is new tools for supporting today's young people. And this is for coaches, educators, parents. Much of what Julie and I just shared, we've learned from this class. It used to be formerly called Nurtured Heart, the Nurtured Heart course. And so it's three sessions over the course of 3 weeks in 2 hours an evening. It's going to be online, and it begins May 17th. I tell you what, this changed our parenting, and not only our parenting, I implement these strategies with everyone I lead. And so if you want to be a part of this, you can check out the Shift Initiative on their Facebook page or mark your connection card, and we'll send you the link and the registration info. If you sign up this weekend, use this discount code right here, XPTFAMILY, and you'll get 20% off of the registration. Now, in-person kids environments are resuming here in the building. We're so excited about this, as you heard, on Sunday, May 23rd at the 9 a.m. service. And so we're excited to have our kids back in the building. And this is a great opportunity if you would like to be a part of instilling belief and high expectations in kids and helping them grow in their faith. We would love for you to join the team that makes that happen. So you can let us know if you'd like to be a part of that. And then I hope you return next weekend as we kick off this brand new series called Parenting in the 21st Century. ministry. And I'm going to share next weekend four phases of parenting that have been huge for Julie and I. We learned this a number of years ago. It takes us from birth all the way through adulthood and into friendship. And this is actually the single most requested teaching that I've ever done. And it's been a while since I've taught it. In fact, I had a 14-year-old then, and things have changed a bit. I have an 18-year-old that's now an adult. And so the cool thing is, even if you've heard this before, you're probably at a different phase. And so I hope you'll return next weekend, invite somebody to join you as we look at what it means to lead toward becoming lifelong friends for life. And then last, there's going to be some exclusive material that we're going to release just to our YouTube channel, some of our conversation with Dr. Tim Elmore. I asked him the question, Tim, if there's one thing that you can leave us with in terms of walking out of the pandemic, what would that one thing be? And he's going to share this, and so if you want to hear what that is, you can subscribe to our YouTube channel, and then when that hits the YouTube channel, you will be notified. In fact, hit the bell so you make sure you're notified as soon as that hits. Now, I want to close and just share one more story that comes from the Pandemic Population book. It's really an urban legend about two men who were hospitalized with terminal illness. And they're sharing a hospital room, and one was in a bed next to a window, and the other was in a bed across the room against a wall. And each day, the man who sat next to the window, he would describe what he was seeing out the window. And he would talk about seeing children with ice cream cones sitting at a park bench, and you know, young lovers walking through the park hand in hand, and you know, pet owners walking their dogs, and even families flying kites together. And as time went on, the gentleman who was not next to the window, who was across the room, who couldn't see out the window, he began to get frustrated as he heard these things. In fact, he began to get bitter because he wasn't able to take in these experiences. Shortly after that, the man next to the window actually passed away. And after they had removed his body from the room and, you know, changed the bedding, the man across the room said, I want that bed. I want to be in that bed over by the window. And so he got moved over next to the window. And when he was shocked. Because when he looked out that window, all he saw was a blank brick wall. Because see, the man, as he was describing what he saw, that all came from his imagination. He was choosing his perspective. You know, over these last 5 weeks, we've been talking about how there's a lot of vacant places we've discovered in our lives as a result of the pandemic. It's uncovered these places. And you know, we didn't choose the pandemic. The pandemic chose us, but you and I, we get to choose how we exit the pandemic. And so, you know, we can choose to walk out of it bitter, or we can choose to walk out better. And see, here's what I want for you, and here's really what I expect of you. I expect that this is going to be your best year yet. And see, here's why I expect that, because I believe that if you'll take the things we've talked about, and if you'll reflect on some of the questions we've been asking, if you'll think about some of the things God's been showing you and stirring in you, and the silver lining moments, I believe that you actually can do it. I really do. And so as we close this weekend, we're going to teach you a new song. And we rarely do this in this last song slot, but here's why we're going to do this weekend. Because this song actually talks about high belief and expectation and the power of that. In fact, take a look at a couple of these lyrics. It says, I will bless the name of the Lord. And take a look at this next line. It says, before the breakthrough. See, we like to bless the name of the Lord after the breakthrough, right? After God works, okay, God, thank you. I'm going to bless you for that. This says I'm going to bless you before the breakthrough. And then it says, we lay down all your worries. We lay down every chain because he will make us whole again. And there's some belief. There's some expectation in that. And God wants to do that in us. For everything is possible. Everything is possible for the one who holds it all. His name is Jesus. And so let's go ahead and stand, and let's sing this together, learn this together, and make this our declaration.